How have you not seen this?
Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Tim Myers.
Hey there.
And our special guest, Bree Forney.
Hey, what's up?
And Michael Frank.
Hey.
And we just finished watching Wet Hot American Summer. David Wayne from comedy troupe Stella and State fame, his directorial debut. He did some other great films such as Wanderlust, The Ten, Role Models, which is personally one of my favorite comedies and definitely my favorite film by him. It's a cult classic, beefed it at the box office, basically, despite making back its budget, which was just under $300,000. A lot of great comedic actors, a lot of people who were involved with The State and Stella, Michael Showalter, Michael Ian Black, Ken Marino, Joe Trulio, Zach Orth, J.D. Miles, a whole bunch of them. And then, of course, David Hyde Pierce, Janine Garofalo, a bunch of other comedic talents as well. Pretty big movie as far as comedy fans are concerned. Pretty big one. So, Bree, how have you not seen this?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm one of those people who doesn't see a lot of movies. So, okay. I don't know. It's just kind of expected that I don't see movies. Like, I'm one of those people where you name a movie and I probably haven't seen it. First movie I've ever seen in my entire life, actually. This one right now.
Well, get out of here. Get out of here.
Yep.
Just
no,
every episode.
I love
it. Yeah. I'll say, yeah. What, you never seen Demolition Man? I mean, I get it, but come on. The Blade Trilogy? What? All right. Mike, how have you not seen this?
So it came out in 2001.
Correct.
To go back to my life in 2001.
What?
So that puts me in sixth grade, I guess.
Okay.
And I feel like at that point, my introduction to comedy, strangely enough, was through the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Okay.
So that's where I was at in 2001, which is obviously not at all similar to this movie, but I thought it was fantastic. Very much suits my comedic tastes today.
Nice. If you took a BuzzFeed quiz, which blue collar comedian would you be? You seem like a real Engvall.
Like in the way I do my comedy now?
No, that's just the first name that I remembered.
Oh, okay.
Tanner Salad. Total Tanner Salad.
I will say I'm still kind of a Ron White fan.
Yeah, I like Ron White. Out of that bunch, I do genuinely like Ron White, and I do think he's funny.
Yeah. I can't knock him completely because they kind of made me go, oh, comedy, this is kind of cool. So I can't knock him completely. Who would I be? Larry the Cable Guy is probably the most. Not that I do characters, but he's the most like out there of the bunch. I feel like, and I'm definitely out there.
I would have guessed Jeff Foxworthy for you. Yeah. It's something in the voice. I think you sound a little bit like Jeff Foxworthy.
The delivery and the kids.
Yeah.
I bring back the fact that of that bunch, Larry the Cable Guy is the one that's really out there. Yeah. So you, Larry the Cable Guy, is the Captain Beefheart, the Gigi Allen of the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Yeah.
Larry the Cable Guy, the William S. Burroughs of the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
My favorite Larry the Cable Guy bit. Is he takes a pot and he puts it on his head. He says, "Hey, look at me, I'm a pothead."
Oh, God.
My favorite Larry the Cable Guy bit is where he has a food line that is sold almost exclusively at Big Lots.
I've seen it at Kroger.
I'm sure, yeah, it's other places, but it only ever pops up in front of me at Big Lots.
It's the biscuits with the peppers in it, right?
Yeah, the jalapeno biscuits. Jalapeno cornbread or whatever. Yeah.
You wash that down with some Pepto.
My favorite Larry the Camel Guy bit is where it became nostalgic to talk about him because no one talks about him anymore.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part about him.
What is he doing now?
Well, there was Larry the Cable Guy, health inspector. There was Yeah.
Seriously? After the Rock. Didn't
yeah,
you
after
one?
Dwayne Johnson bowed out.
Those are tough shoes to fill.
Yeah. Delta Farce with actually Bill Engvall. Because what else was Bill Engvall doing? And then there was Witless Protection, which is like 2 or 3 years old. And that
Witless Protection.
Witless Protection.
Gotta love the title.
That's the greatest name for a movie I've heard of.
The trailers are some of the worst things in the world. The Cars movies. Those have probably kept him afloat. Cars 2.
Oh my god, he was Mater.
Yeah. Cars 2 has the distinction of being the only Pixar movie to date that I will not watch.
I've never seen it either.
I haven't either.
Were there planes?
That was Disney, yeah.
That's true.
I do like the first Cars, even though it's basically the same story as Doc Hollywood with Michael J. Fox. But I do really like it. And Paul Newman's fucking great in it, of course.
Paul Newman is in Cars.
Robert Redford? Is he?
Nah. Don't get greedy. You either get Butcher Sundance. I feel like we've strayed a little. So I'm gonna rein us back in to Wet Hot American Summer. So, Michael, you said you liked it. Bree, what did you think?
Yeah, I loved it. It was incredible.
All right, so let's get into some of it. The folks involved with the state and Stella, they're more subversive in their approach to comedy, and that's definitely evident with their sketch comedy, evident in every movie David Wayne has done, but especially this one and the 10, like whereas Wanderlust and Role Models kind of follow like a more mainstream, more formulaic kind of approach to a comedy film, whereas their whole thing is just kind of doing whatever the fuck they want, basically. There's so many ridiculous moments. One of them is that quick cut when Joe Latrullio's character comes back on the motorcycle. It's clearly not Joe Latrullio. There's the whip hand to Janine Garofalo, and then whip back, and Joe Latrullio's magically there.
Just scenes that don't even... They just don't serve any plot purpose.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd, like, wiping his tray off.
Yes, that's one of my favorite scenes.
It's like a 90-second scene, and there's no reason for it to be
no,
there.
No, that's nothing.
And it's incredible.
This and Role Models are my favorite Paul Rudd roles. Like, Role Models is genuinely, like, a good movie with a really great story behind it. And Paul Rudd is just so great as an asshole in this movie.
Because they always cast Paul Rudd as, like, a straight man.
Yeah.
And it annoys me because he has such, like, campy chops. Like, when you give him, like, room to just improvise, he's incredible.
Yeah. Well, that's what I liked about Our Idiot Brother, is that he's not playing that, like, kind of snarky straight man. He's playing a fucking moron who's, like, is actually good-natured in heart. So, like, he's not cracking wise every 5 minutes, whereas... Every other time you see him, it's just Paul Rudd, basically.
Was a lot of this movie improvised?
They do script a good chunk of their stuff, but when you get people like this together, there's going to be things that are improvised, I'm sure.
I couldn't... You said it was a $300,000 budget? Which, I mean, with the cast that they had, I mean, I guess it was before all of them kind of blew up, maybe.
David Hyde Pierce is the biggest name attached to this movie, really.
Oh, wow.
Because Frasier was still going on, hadn't wrapped yet. And then maybe Christopher Maloney, because I'm pretty sure he was on Law & Order when this was going on. Christopher Maloney is Gene the Chef, who keeps saying weird fucking things and then lying about it. I'm going to spit mud on my ass. And that, like, maybe Janine Garofalo, but I mean, like, so those are your biggest names. Like, even Bradley Cooper, he was a nobody. Yeah. He wasn't established at that point. Amy Poehler had, like, the UCB television show, but she, like, it's pre-Parks and Rec. It's, like, pre-before she starts popping up in movies with any regularity whatsoever. And then, of course, the rest of like, even Paul Rudd at this point, like, this is post...
Is he in Clueless?
Yeah, this is post-Clueless, but, like pre-40-year-old Virgin, those, like, the Apatow movies that really kind of, like, not necessarily catapulted him, but definitely... kept his momentum going upward. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like before this, he was in something like Clueless or that awful Halloween movie that he's in.
A horror movie?
Yeah. Really? Halloween 5, I believe. H2O. Oh, Oh, I wish he'd been in H2O. Instead, I had to settle for Busta Rhymes, who at one point jumps out with a shovel, hits Michael Myers, and says, "Trick or treat, motherfucker."
I want to say, like, this is one of my favorite comedy movies ever. Yeah, I like it so much because it mirrors my all-time favorite Airplane.
Yeah.
Because, like, finding a way to do a good parody is difficult.
Yeah.
Because there needs to be some respect for the underlying material.
Yes.
But they also, like, bits in Airplane are the same way. It's like, they just put this in because it would be fun to do.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many things in there, they're like, let's just make a trash can satellite. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's cheap and low budget, but it's fun, and you get invested. You feel like a kid, like, making a movie, watching this movie.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing I love about this, too. Like, you watch this movie, and, like, I get, it makes you feel like you could do this. Like, and that's not to discredit their ability by any stretch, but it's a very simply made movie.
Yeah.
It's shot on a campgrounds. There's, like, a couple of shots off. And even the action stuff, like that rap scene when Ken Marino's character goes into the rescue. Yeah. We don't see shit. It's all off screen. Yeah. And it's just Joe Latrullio doing that cheap thing and reacting. He's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it. Oh, you did it. You saved him." And it's just on him the whole time.
The line where he's like, "Next time we go save the kids, you drive the van."
Yes,
yeah.
That was killer. Like,
and so much of the state and the Stella mindset is stuff like that. There's actually Ken Marino had a great character on the state. And I am blanking on the fucking character's name. I want to say it was Kenny or something, or Lonnie, something along those lines. Basically, his character came out with a catchphrase. And he would just yell out of nowhere, "I want to dip my balls in it." And he had two ping pong balls that he would hold up as he was saying it. Because they were kind of like skewering that trope of like shows like SNL that had characters like the church lady that like were these really like just empty kind of characters that had like catchphrases or stuff. Yeah. And usually the conceit of the sketch is every time he would show up, he would go to, like, everyone would be like, "Come on, say it." And it would be him getting dejected. He's like, "No, what's the point?" And, like, just having this existential crisis about saying his dumb catchphrase. It was such a great sketch. And I think that sketch really, really sums up David Wayne's approach to comedy, where, like, again, like, they can do things like Role Models, where it kind of plays into some more mainstream ideas of comedy. But then they can do something like this where we love this, obviously. Mm-hmm. I can understand how a lot of people would watch this and be like, "What the fuck is this?"
Right,
like, like, they would be angry that they just had to do this.
But they commit to it so hard.
Yes, and that's the difference, too. Is like part of the thing that frustrated me with the show Stella was, like, some of the stuff, like, there's obviously a trace of irony to a lot of what they're doing. And I can handle that, but Stella sometimes, like, it was too much for me.
Yeah.
Like, it was way too much, like, winking at the camera. I was like, all right, man, I know, but come on, just do it straight once.
Just that scene where they're saving the kids and they have to get the phone in the...
Like, yes, yeah, in the infirmary.
And Janine Garofalo just comes in. The phone, where's the fucking phone?
Yes.
And she, like, delivers it with, like, Broadway, like, perfect pitch, and then they just start destroying it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's so cathartic to watch.
Yeah, and they really do. They commit to all of it. God, Paul Rudd especially. I love the recurring gag of him driving children witnesses down a country road and throwing them out of the van.
Yeah.
Like, just the cover for it.
I think my favorite recurring element was when people would run away directly away from the camera in just such a ridiculous
way. Yes,
like,
yes.
There was a lot of hand raising above the head in victory.
Yeah.
Like, over and over and over.
The kid who lights his fart on fire.
Yeah.
The shit in the air.
We had to talk about the most obvious thing we haven't hit on yet. So it's a movie at a summer camp. The main cast is all playing camp counselors for the most part. These are all people in their fucking 30s playing teenagers.
Right.
Yeah. Which is another thing that, like, is so goddamn funny to me.
Yeah.
And that's actually when they were talking about doing the sequel, they were talking about doing it as a prequel. Because, like, 12, 13 years have passed now, so they're obviously they all look even older.
Yeah.
It's actually funny that we did do this because they did just recently greenlight a sequel, finally. So that's happening. So we got that to look forward to. But and then of course there's that post credits scene where they show up like 10 years later, looking exactly the same as they did, and they don't even attempt to cover. There's like, we know what we're doing. Fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I love how in like every. Like, there's a bunch of, like, weird, dark scenes. Like,
you
think, like, the kid going out of the van, or, like, when they're all doing, like, heroin.
And they're playing, like, this, like, poppy song. It was a montage.
Like, it's a montage. Simple contrast. So much of this movie and the jokes are just simple contrast between, like, music and
that town happening. Sequence is so good.
It's so funny.
There were multiple montages in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, training to...
Yeah, Christopher Maloney's training montage.
But the one where they end up in the, you know, the drug house or whatever. I don't know what the term is. Like, after an hour
in the heroin tenement in the hallway.
That was fantastic.
And especially because after that, they're like, oh, we were in town for an hour.
Just destroying the illusion of the
They came back from town, you're like, oh, maybe they spent the day there. And it's like, no, even an hour was fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just gotta get away.
Yeah.
There's such dumb jokes throughout.
Yeah.
But you can tell they love every single one. Like, right at the end, they throw in that line about being allergic to oxymorons. And it's like, that line in no way needed to be there. And it doesn't even hit very hard, and it's so much different than the rest of the movie.
Jumbo shrimp.
And I love, too, this came out, like, and it's not even really a genre anymore, because, like, this was clearly spoofing, like, camp movies, like Meatballs, Camp Nowhere, Heavyweights, like, everything else that came way before it. It's actually a genre of movie I really like.
Yeah.
Especially because I, like... For 9 years, I worked as somebody who ran programs at a camp. Through high school, I worked as a counselor, like, at 4-H camp. So, like, it's something I have a lot of experience with. And it's fun to see that, but now that genre is, like, almost non-existent, really.
But it's, even though it's, like, skewering those movies, it's still a send-up. Because, like, you still root for Coop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, he's a very likable character. You want to hook up with that girl, even though she's awful.
Yeah. Oh, God. And then when Marguerite Moreau has that speech at the end, like, I'm interested in sex, specifically with Andy and not you.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God. Fuck off.
And that was
the perfect expository.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but that's that mentality, too, though. Like, anybody who's been in that exact position where it's like, oh, you're nice, but really, I just want to fuck this guy, because look how good he looks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get it. Paul Rudd's fucking handsome. And Michael
Schiff.
Well, Michael Showalter is just a goof. Like, a cute goof, but he's still a goof.
I loved how they admit... He, like, adopted a totally new personality, and then the next day, he went right back.
And his new personality was just to go sleeveless and wear a headband.
Right.
But
it was working for you, man.
Oh, it absolutely was. Well, it's like, I love, like, you look at, like, say a movie like Grease, where Olivia Newton-John's character goes through, like, an extreme transformation, like, shows up sunglasses, leather jacket, like, cigarette and everything, like, very apparent. Like, he was already wearing the ridiculous nuthugger shorts.
Yeah.
Just lost the sleeves and a headband. That was it. That was the transformation.
That turned the corner.
You know, I really got the sense from this movie that nobody likes it more than the people in the movie. Like, if you watched it with the entire cast, you just wouldn't hear the movie because they would all be laughing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This looks like a movie that was fun.
They have, the people who are in this, like, have to look back on it when they, you know, when they meet each other, like, Amy Poehler runs into, you know, Bradley Cooper, where they gotta be like, we did that thing.
Yeah.
You know, that was fun. You know,
for no money.
Maybe scale. Yeah. Which, and it sucks too, because, like, they listed it as a flop, but the movie did just south of $2 million. So it made back, like, what, 4 or 5 times its budget?
Yeah.
So on those standards, it was successful.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm sure it also got, like, a super limited fucking release, too.
It's not Little Miss Sunshine. Is that
Look, man, here's the thing about Little Miss Sunshine. Motherfuck Little Miss Sunshine. I say that as a person who enjoys that movie. I fucking hate how over the top everyone gets about that movie. And they're like, oh man, it's so great. It's like, it's okay. It's a good movie.
I enjoyed that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I think it's a good movie.
I haven't seen it since I saw it in theaters, but I enjoyed it. It's no One Hot American Summer in my mind.
Hey, what is? I say that not disliking it, but it's one of those movies that, like, a lot of times people will latch on to, like, and I don't get it.
That was like a sea change movie. It was like Garden State was another one of those movies.
Oh man, motherfuck Garden State. Garden State, I straight up hate. I will fight Garden State.
How's that Kickstarter going for Brad?
He got his money in like a day.
Which is bullshit because
I have a friend who was doing a Kickstarter at the same time as Zach Braff.
Yeah.
Aww.
And I don't know if you guys know the bands like Nickel Creek or the Punch Brothers.
Yeah, Nickel Creek I'm familiar with.
The guy from Nickel Creek. It's like this, like, virtuoso, like, mandolin player.
Yeah.
And he made a documentary about him and his new band and, like, writing a suite. And it's very good if you like music documentaries.
Yeah.
It's How to Grow a Band. I feel like I'm playing it. But it's good to see. And every day he would put on his Facebook how little money he had in comparison to Zach Braff.
Oh man.
And Veronica Mars was happening at the same time, too.
Oh, yeah, and they made their money quick,
story
too.
Story about Veronica Mars. I was forced to watch that with my parents when I went home.
Like the entire series?
No, just the movie. Thankfully. I was not a fan.
I watched the first couple episodes. I couldn't really get into it. Which sucks, because I like Kristen Bell. I think she's a good actress.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't get into it.
I've never seen it. So
neither have I.
How have you not seen it?
I don't understand. Like, I really tried. It's hard for me to get into shows that are essentially some variation on a police procedural, which is what those first couple episodes really struck me as.
The guy who's, like, super deep into The Wire.
Yeah, see, man, look, here's the thing, though. The Wire is so much different, and it's not a police procedural. Like, it's not like there's a different case every week. It's like, every season is them working a case. Like, it's actually playing out the way that being a cop actually plays out.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it also is looking at that story from all the perspectives, not just four different points of view from the four different detectives that are working the case. And that's what I think is very much part of what makes The Wire stand apart from those types of shows.
This is quickly becoming a How Have You Not Seen The Wire podcast.
Yeah. I think like the last five episodes in a row I brought up The Wire.
That was my fault.
Hey, that's all right. So let's get back into Wet Hot American Summer. David Hyde Pierce is so fucking funny in this movie. And it's an odd choice because really his biggest thing at this point is Frasier and then a Sideshow Bob's brother on The Simpsons. Like, so I'm kind of curious, like, what the thought process was on some of the casting in this movie.
It makes sense to me because clearly this movie is about playing against types.
Yes, very much
and
so.
And David Hyde Pierce is very much a type.
Absolutely.
Which, it makes it so easy to write, fuck my cock, for David Hyde Pierce.
Yeah.
And it's just hilarious to
say. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Christopher Maloney at this point too, even today, most widely known for his role as Elliot Stabler on Law and Order, and he's so fucking ridiculous as Gene, the crazy Vietnam chef.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper too. I mean, that's sort of a post, like a look back kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But
and then you have Kobe Smulders who two screen time little 1 second clips of her wearing a black shirt with red polka dots.
I'm still not convinced it's Kobe.
It's totally her. Trust me.
Look, I get it. I want it to be Kobe Smulders because I think that would be a really cool little factoid.
It has to be.
I mean, non-credited role.
See,
she looked pretty young at the time.
But she did, but it wasn't even like on her page. Like, and usually uncredited roles are listed on, like, the sites.
She's just being humble. Yeah. She doesn't want
to
take credit.
2001, she couldn't afford to be humble. She didn't have that How I Met Your Mother money.
She went back and she's like, I don't want people to know. I just want people to watch it for the first time.
No one can ever know. Classic Kobe Smulders.
Can we talk about how great the music is in this movie?
Yes, the music.
Like, the montage song, like the show me the theme.
Yeah, that's so great.
Play it multiple times. Did David Wayne write that song?
No, that's a legit song, because I thought that might be the case, and then I saw it pop up in another movie. So it's a real song. And it makes sense, too, because the movie itself takes place in 1981.
Yeah.
So that kind of, that time period, just lousy with songs like that. I think it may have been before Survivor wrote Eye of the Tiger, so the Fever was their go-to. This is the other thing I like about this, too. Kevin Sussman, the guy that plays the weird dude who, like, is just doing the telekinesis or whatever at the talent show, he's such a funny and talented comedic actor. And there's this, and then his other big thing is he has a recurring role in Big Bang Theory, which makes me so goddamn sad. He's Joel, the comic book shop owner.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it sucks too, because there's a couple, because John Ross Bowie has a recurring role on there as another professor, and he's really fucking hilarious too. Like, he's been on Curb and a bunch of other stuff, but he's not in a lot of TVs and movies. Like, it's pretty sporadic for him. He was in The Heat last year for about 2 minutes and fucking killed it because he's hilarious. But yeah, it's unfortunate because guys like that, they are really funny, and I'm sure that they're absolutely grateful for the work, and they don't give a shit that Big Bang Theory is, you know, racist and misogynist and whatever else.
I've never really watched it. Those are its issues, huh?
It's also not funny. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I watch it a lot, though, because it's on when I cook dinner.
Here's what you need to understand. I started watching that show when it came out with my friend, because that's very much, like, those characters are into the shit that I'm into. So I'm like, oh, cool, a show about fucking nerds. Yeah, I'll watch this.
But it's all racism and misogyny.
Well, it's not all racism. I'll get to that here in a second before I redirect us.
I'm curious about these racist, misogynist nerds. This is intriguing.
But basically, like, it's just, it's not funny. Like, instead of doing, like, jokes that occur organically, like an Arrested Development type show, where the humor comes from the character's, like, natural reactions to a situation, it's like, oh, and here one of the nerds makes a reference to Star Trek for whatever reason. Cue laugh track. Like, they're not jokes. Like, they're
nerd jokes not written by nerds.
And like, not written for nerds. Nerd jokes for non-nerds.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. And that's the appeal. So, I watched up until about halfway through, not this most recent season that ended, but the season last year. I watched halfway through that from the beginning in the hopes that it would get better. I finally said, no, fuck this. Yeah. It was like 4 or 5 seasons I've invested myself in. I can't do this. Like, and I would watch them, like, or I'd watch them on Hulu or download them the next day or whatever, and I'd just watch them, and I would just sit in my room and, like, I would just, like, stare. Like,
might as well be a blank screen.
Like, like I was in a catatonic state. I was like, none of this is making me laugh. Oh, John Ross Bowie's in this episode. Cool. Oh, there's Kevin Sussman. Back to just nothing. And my big issue with the show is, basically, only two kinds of women exist in the world of this show. Either hot and stupid, or mousy and really smart. There's no middle, or controlling and what would commonly be referred to as frigid / bitching. Like, that's their grades of the women that exist in this world. And it's awful. Like, you have Mayim Bialik actually came on as a series regular a couple seasons ago, who played Blossom. And she's actually, like, has a PhD, and she's fucking smart as shit. And, like, she gets a little bit to work with every now and then, but, like...
But she didn't come on until, what season did you say? Like,
season 3 or 4.
Yeah, they
or season 4, yeah.
Like, the writers didn't realize that women could be intelligent until
exactly.
Then.
Well, they even had Sarah Gilbert from Roseanne was on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
As a professor, but, like, they just don't fucking write them interestingly. They don't write them competently.
Yeah.
They don't write them as equal. Like...
No.
And then there's an Indian character who just literally every joke, like every obvious joke that you could fucking make about an Indian character and their religion, like he's the butt of so many jokes, as is his religion, as is his family. I'm just like,
all that matters is how he says his lines because he has that accent.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I'm not opposed to you having an Indian character with an accent, but like, but I also feel like you could have just as easily not done that Right. Where you're like, oh no, it's funny if he has an accent.
You have to realize this is by the same guy who produced Two and a Half Men.
Oh, I...
And it's probably a step up from that show in terms of how they treat women.
Oh, man.
Right now, I've been nodding my head knowingly this entire time.
I don't know about all that.
But I am participating.
It's, yeah, I've got a lot of hate for the Big Bang Theory.
No, I'm not defending. I'm just saying Two and a Half Men is even farther down that rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I feel like Portlandia does the Indian character really well. Because they know exactly what they're doing. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, Kamal is also Pakistani. Yeah. But he does play Indian roles from time to time. So, sorry, that's my fault for anytime somebody brings Big Bang Theory up, I can't not.
Hey, no, I was very invested in that conversation. I say, last point, if you want to watch a good Big Bang Theory, watch The IT Crowd.
It's smarter, there you go.
It's better written, more deep characters.
Okay. Right. And Chris O'Dowd is so charming.
Yeah.
Alright, so yeah, swinging back over to Wet Hot American Summer. What John Benjamin, of course, pops up very briefly, and I get very excited anytime John Benjamin is in anything. And time-wise, this would have been when Home Movies was out, so he had some kind of leverage. I don't want to say star power.
He was on UPN.
Yeah, whatever.
He was a minor character on a UPN show.
But yeah, well, I'm really happy because, like, you look at something like this 13 years ago. John Benjamin is voicing a can of mixed vegetables.
Yeah.
First voice he ever did?
No. He had done. He was
lots of voices.
He was in Home Movies. Coach McGurk and Brendan on that show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now to see, like, he has not one but two fucking amazing shows: Archer and Bob's Burgers. Mm-hmm.
Home Movies was great.
Home Movies was wonderful. Well, and Bob's Burgers is Lauren Bouchard
they're neck and neck for me.
They're great fucking shows, and now, like, and even Home Movies was a show. It's a show for comedy nerds, the same way Bob's Burgers is. It's like Bob's Burgers, like, your main cast is Benjamin, Kristen Schaal, and Eugene Merman, and Dan Mintz. And then they have, like, Paula Tompkins is on there pretty regularly, Kinane, Patton Oswalt, Gaffigan, Hader. Like, all these other great comedians. And then you look at Home Movies, and they did, like, Mitch Hedberg was on Home Movies.
Yeah.
At one point.
He's so funny.
As
the fifth grader, the cool fifth grader.
Yeah. he was on there. Emo Phillips had a recurring role.
Is this Home Movie stuff YouTubeable?
I have
all of the DVDs,
it's a great show. Like, Jen Kirkman was on Home Movies, so it's really cool to see, like, shows like just these fun shows.
Hamlet Adlon.
And just, like, to see, like, they could bring on, like, probably actors, but, like, no, let's put comedians on the show as much as we can, which is really cool. So yeah, that Home Movies was what John Benjamin was doing around the time that this came out. Like I said, most of the rest of them, with the exception of, like, Christopher Maloney and David Hyde Pierce and Garofalo, didn't really have a whole lot of, like, anything big going on for the most part. So it's really interesting to see how this cast came together. And that, when you look at, like, 80% of the cast is the cast of The State, the sketch show that they had on MTV.
And Elizabeth Banks is pretty big now, too.
Yeah, Elizabeth She's Banks is blown up as well.
Yeah. And... fake Winnie Cooper or
yeah, Marguerite Moreau.
yeah.
She. I was looking through her credits. She was in 7 episodes of Grey's Anatomy. Recently, I think this season. So,
I think part of the reason I love this movie is that, like, I grew up watching, like, The Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Like, all the time, and there's that movie is so rooted in a sense of, like, the same nostalgia.
Yeah, absolutely. It is.
Like. There's moments in that movie where it's just like, this happens in camp. So even if we're making fun of it, like, it still feels, like, genuine. And, like, they actually...
There's a certain fondness for it. Yeah.
Oh, the fucking D&D kid. I remember trying to impress girls at camp and been like, fuck you, nerd. I know that song and dance by bespectacled friends.
And then I hung out with Cure Girl. That definitely happened.
Yeah. I actually, my 4-H trip was pretty much a different version of this. I tried to to talk to some of the girls, and they're like, oh, whatever. And then I met the girl who played Minor Threat for me the first time and got me into punk rock. I was like, all right, I'll take this outcome. This works way better for me.
Could have been way different. You could have been really into Robbie Williams.
Oh, man, yeah. Could have been really into Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
Hey, Dustin, have you heard this? It'll change your life. It's called Dracula.
Burn through the witches.
Yeah, and dig through the ditches. He does it all. You and I talk far too much about Dracula by Rob Zombie. I think it comes up whenever we're around each other 4 out of 5 times.
Yeah. I don't know. That song is so funny.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing.
It's my go-to jukebox song at this point. Literally no one does anything. Because there's nothing you can do to that song.
You can't dance to it. You can't really get it.
Yeah, it's just weird industrial stuff, and everyone's just out of the car. Just
not true. There's 3 things you can do to that song: dig through the ditches, burn through the witches, and slam in the back of my triangular. Three options, Tim.
Well, I am lost.
Sorry.
What is this Dracula which you speak?
It's one of the dumbest, silliest new metal songs ever written. I'll play it for you guys when we're done.
All okay, right. But something about the movie.
Yes, yes.
Does anyone remember the scene where I said this is the best scene in the movie as I was watching it for the first time ever?
David Hyde Pierce, and he was pointing up.
Yeah.
And he said, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
What's wrong? And he goes, nothing. Yet.
Yeah.
That was my favorite scene.
Oh, that was so good. Oh, and then that moment later. What's wrong? I can't tell you right now. Meet me at the picnic table.
Yeah, this is neither the time nor the place.
Yes. So like I said, like that sums up David Wayne and the state and the Stella's mentality. Yeah. To kind of how they approach comedy, and they're so ridiculous about it. But it's so refreshing, too. Like, it's not like, say you compare something like this to all of the Austin Powers movies.
Right.
Where it's, like, formula and recycling the jokes, and, like...
It felt kind of like I was watching, like, a better Napoleon Dynamite or something.
Yeah, I think it's very... I think a lot of... I measure a lot of independent comedies against this. Yeah. Like, I don't know what I would call my favorite one, because I just feel them having trouble conjuring any up besides this one right now. I know this one ranks very highly. This is like the diehard of independent comedy movies for me. Like, this is what I measure everything in the genre up against. Yeah. Like, the way I do action movies against diehards. Like, oh, Vin Diesel had a new movie come out. I was like, all right, I'm going to be taking notes how he measures up to John McClane. But yeah, Wet Hot American Summer is the equivalent for me. Like, anytime... So, like, I watch something like a Napoleon Dynamite, I'm like, no, absolutely not.
So how do you feel about the, like, blank movie series, like, date movies?
Oh, they're fucking garbage. I hate them as much as I hate The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, really?
Because it's the same thing. Those, like, there are literally no jokes in those movies. It's all references to things that exist.
Mm-hmm.
I have gotten drunk and gone to the theater and watched far more of those than I am comfortable admitting to you guys right now. I think I watched most of Date Movie when I was drinking in my dorm when it was on, like, the college cable channel.
Mm-hmm.
Epic Movie, I downloaded and got drunk and watched.
That excuses it in a way. I'm not really sure why.
The way I look at it, like, I love movies. Obviously, I love movies. Like, I've got a fucking podcast about them. Movies are, like, one of my favorite things. So I'm just as intrigued by a great movie as I am a bad movie. And I think you can learn things from both, which is, like, especially in terms of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen The Love Guru. Like, I've watched some dog shit movies with the intention of going in as, like, this is a lesson in what not to do. Like, this is a lesson in what doesn't work.
I want to go back to those date movies.
Yes.
Like, what you think about that, because I've never seen any of them.
You ever seen, like, Scary Movie?
I haven't even seen Scary Movie.
Really?
They're, like, the Scary Movie series, started out, they were at least trying a little with those, but with the first one or two. And then the later ones, it's weird because the same guys that did Airplane, like, started, like, getting involved, like, the Zucker Brothers. So they were, like... okay. Like, so Leslie Nielsen started being in them, but they were still, like, it didn't feel the same. Like, and I mean, obviously they did Airplane, which is kind of, like, the measure for most spoofs. Mm-hmm. I would say that and, like, Young Frankenstein by Mel Brooks. So it's weird, like, to try and watch those. The only one of those movies I've seen that I really like is Not Another Teen Movie. Because while I do, a lot of it is reference stuff, I also feel like that movie actually looks at, like, dissecting the tropes and those kinds of movies, which none of the other ones do. And, of course, you have Chris Evans, a very young Chris Evans as the lead, which I'm super fucking on board with. You have Good Charlotte as the band playing the prom in the movie, which I'm also on board with. But instead of the way that they do them now, like epic movie and disaster movie, their idea of a joke is, oh, look, here's this thing from a movie that exists. Like, they just show it to you. Mm-hmm. And somebody just says, oh, it's a guy with the same haircut as Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men. Mm-hmm. He's not going to do anything, but it's just, we shot a guy, we dressed him up like this, and then it's there. Whereas, like, Not Another Teen Movie, there's one of my favorite scenes is, it very loosely, like, obviously it jumbles a lot of the tropes and stuff from teen movies, especially, like, the John Hughes stuff. But its main plot is primarily revolving around She's All That, which, of course, is, like, a remake of probably three movies from the 80s, but I can't remember them off the top of my head. But there's this moment where they pick the girl, and she's, like, she's wearing overalls and paint and got glasses, and Chris Evans is just recoiling, is like, ugh, she's a monster. She's got a ponytail and glasses. It really is. Like, it's kind of picking that apart and just being like, no, this is so stupid that, like, the Clark Kent effect works on making women attractive.
Yeah.
And there are moments like that. Like, there's some jokes in there that are kind of weak and not as great. But on the whole, I do like Not Another Teen Movie. The rest of them can fuck right off because they're terrible.
Is that one made by the same people?
No. Let me pull it up. I don't know if they wrote that. It's Seitzer and Friedberg, I think, is the name of the two guys that make those movies.
Okay.
I know that they've been involved. There's actually, it's in my Netflix queue. I haven't watched it yet. A Hunger Games parody just came out.
Really?
You know, 3 years too late.
Right.
It's called The Starving Games, because...
Yeah.
But they've gotten worse, and they were already not good to begin with.
I read a Hunger Games parody that was called The Hunger But Mainly Death Games. I think it might have been the Harvard Lampoon's, like, version. It was alright. I don't know. I also read, like, a Twilight... spoof called Nightlight. That one was pretty good. Nightlight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Twilight is rich for parody. Like, it's
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, is that one a lot of? Isn't there, like, a Twilight parody movie that's like vampire movie?
Vampire Suck, which I did see, which was awful. Primarily because they convinced Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall to be in it, which made me so sad because Kids in the Hall is one of my earliest influences as far as getting into comedy and to see...
Don't see Dave Foley's newest stand-up special.
Oh, no.
He's very depressed.
Oh, that's a bummer.
His whole stand-up is how depressed he is.
Wow.
So it's like, make...
No, you put energy into it. He just goes up and is like, wah, wah.
Oh, no.
Well, I could have had sex with Uma Thurman. And this
Dave Foley! Oh. You fool!
It's just him, like, every regret he has in his life.
For, like, an hour?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I couldn't make it through. I was like, I used to love you.
That's rough. It's in my queue, too.
Now you don't even love yourself.
Well, maybe he'll be better. Kids in the Hall just started another tour, so maybe that'll pick the spirits up. No, same guy's not involved in Not Another Teen Movie, which explains a lot.
Yeah.
And actually, it's directed by... I'm going to look this guy up.
I remember seeing that on the shelf at Blockbuster.
Yeah, I own this movie. I believe I bought it from the $5 bin.
I liked it. My favorite part is when she's, like, painting and you can't see the easel and he walks in, like, what are you painting? And she says it's, like, her mom or something. It's just this, like, stick figure with a giant head.
Yeah. and there really are. Like, there's so many fucking great moments in that movie. And again, like I said, like that dissection of the tropes.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Seltzer and Jason Friedberg. are the two fucks that make these awful movies. They wrote this first Scary Movie. They did Spy Hard, which has Leslie Nielsen, and is a very, very uneven parody.
I've never heard of that.
It wasn't the best
it's
thing
no
about
naked
it.
Gun, I'm guessing.
Huh?
It's no Naked Gun.
No, definitely not. No, the best thing about it is it's like a send-up of like the Bond films and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The best part is that Weird Al does the theme song, and they do it like a Bond opening sequence, like with all the graphics and stuff. So this is the Seltzer and Friedberg filmography. It's Spy Hard, Scary Movie, Date Movie, Epic Movie, Meet the Spartans, which I dragged my friend to. He tried to get up and leave. There were like four of us with him. We just boxed him. We were like, no, you're watching this. Well, it's
oh
like, I didn't want to see it. I was like, you're watching this. His review afterwards, I would have rather watched somebody hold me at gunpoint and make me watch Brian Dennehy rape my family.
Oh my God.
That was his review of Meet
oh
the Spartans. Which, I don't understand why I had to bring Brian Dennehy into
wow.
it.
Is he a comedy writer?
Yes.
A genius.
Yeah.
A good critique.
But yeah, he was very, very disheartened. I had never seen him sadder than after we got out of that movie.
I don't know. I went to the midnight premiere of The Last Airbender.
Oh no.
Yeah. Oh. That was probably the saddest I've ever been in my entire
God.
Life.
Oh God, we just looked broken.
I was dressed up for that premiere.
Oh no.
Suki, who was not in the movie because it only took place over the first like three episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh no.
It was so
just like similar to Not Another Teen Movie or
no, this was like legitimate. It was what's his name? The director.
Oh, M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan directed a movie version of Avatar The Last Airbender. Except it was only like the first half of the first season of the TV show.
Is there a twist at the end?
The twist was that everyone went home and wanted to kill themselves. But yeah, he got rid of all the humor, he changed all the pronunciations of the names, and it was just terrible, awful, so bad.
He's in a bad run right now.
He's been in a bad run for a while.
I think
Unbreakable is good. I like Unbreakable.
I like The Village,
actually. Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis and Sam Jackson.
Signs was good.
Signs was okay. I thought I got bogged down way too much with the religious stuff.
Yeah.
Like
Joaquin Phoenix is so good in that movie.
Oh yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is great. I like there's parts of The Village that I like. He undoes himself. Like his whole thing is like he has to shoehorn that twist in.
Yeah.
I was like, if you had just not forced that on us at the end of The Village, I thought The Village was an interesting movie up until that point. I was really on board with it, and then it's like, just kidding.
Is The Village based on the novel Running Out of Time?
I think it is, actually.
Because that makes sense, because, like, the twist is in the book, you know?
Yeah,
it's
but
like
he
the
sure,
same story.
He sure as shit didn't stick to the source material for Last Airbender, though.
Well, yeah.
So
that's true.
So, I mean, what, like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then, oh, Jesus Christ, what was that? The Happening. One of the worst movies I've ever seen.
That trailer was crazy, though.
Oh, the trailer was great.
Yeah.
And the problem is the trailer, like, shot the entire movie's wad. Because the entire selling point of that was, oh, it's his first R-rated movie. And there's a couple of really cool sequences, like, kill sequences. Like, what would a dude just, like, because the whole thing is people, basically, whatever their defense mechanism is that keeps them, like, keeps them preserving themselves, just turns off. So a guy climbs into a lion cage in a zoo in Pennsylvania. And just gets his arm ripped off by a lion and just stands there and watches it. And it's so fucking disturbing.
Is this the thing where the trees are, like, killing everything?
Yeah, yeah. The plants are releasing spores to make John Leguizamo cut his wrist or whatever.
Oh, it's John Leguizamo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, John Leguizamo is not the worst part of this movie. So, it's fucking bad. It's very bad.
You know, I actually thought that Final Destination was a spoof when I first saw it.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that it was a spoof of the horror movie genre.
It just comes across that way, but I think most modern horror movies come across that way nowadays, though.
I don't know. There are some good ones.
There are some good... There absolutely are. I think
they're getting better, too.
I think some of them are, definitely.
I heard Conjuring was great.
Yeah. The Conjuring was really good.
Conjuring was... I'm on the fence. Like,
really?
I like The Conjuring. I don't know. part of
the... I don't like the frame of the, like, Annabelle doll.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to do with the story at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of unnecessary stuff in there. I'm also, like, I don't know, like, possession, like, type stories, like, not necessarily my thing.
Yeah.
As far as those kind of movies. I do, like, I think Patrick Wilson's fucking great in it. And I do think there's a lot of great things. It just, I don't know. It's one of those ones where, like, I feel like it doesn't keep me on edge as much as it should. Now, Insidious, on the other hand, like, I genuinely had goosebumps during parts of that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the one where he has to, like, go into his own subconscious?
Yeah.
I felt the opposite way. I don't know. I felt comforted, but... I mean, not comforted, but, like, when he goes into his subconscious, I'm like, he's fine. He's going to make it out of this. This is just kind of cool.
It gets dumb at the end, but I think everything leading up to that revelation...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, anytime, like, you walk by, there's nothing there, and then there's just, like, a figure, like...
The child, like, in the background.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
that was really well done.
Or when fucking Tiptoe Through the Tulips by Tiny Tim just comes on the record player out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, because that's just... You can just play that song to any footage, and it's fucking creepy as shit.
Tiny Tim
from Christmas Carol?
He's a
musician.
A musician named Tiny Tim. Tiptoe Through the Tulips! Like,
watch American Horror Story out of order. I have no idea what's going on. It's terrifying.
Is that on the Colorado trip? Or?
No, that was here.
just sit home with Pablo.
In the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Watch American Horror Story.
Alright, I think I'm going to rein this back in. Although, I do think we've had some really great talking points on other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go ahead and wrap up what I would like to do. We started doing it on the show lately. Go around, tell your favorite moment in the movie. Is there your favorite part about the movie or like the moment you knew you were on board? We'll just start with Mike and just kind of work our way around.
That's hard because I've only seen it once to recall specific. But just getting... as soon as I figured out what they were doing, where they were going to lead you in one direction and then just slam you so hard. And like as a, like, you know, someone who does comedy a little bit and, like, you know, watches comedy a lot, I've come to, like, sometimes, you know, I can see where you're going with it.
Yeah.
And here, like, I had my predictions for what they were going to do, and then they just went, nope. And did something totally different. So I don't know. I enjoyed the whole thing the whole way through because of that, just how original it was.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Amy Poehler as the musical
snob. She's so good.
The whole time, just like yelling at these children for being so terrible. And then in the like talent show, when they're fantastic and she's like spinning around backwards doing the piano and then everyone boos. I love that. That was my favorite line.
That's
one of the things I couldn't predict. That they were, because everybody was into it the whole
time.
That was my favorite.
I can't work with these amateurs.
Because I expected Amy Poehler to be booing them even though they were great. Like, I got that was her character.
Yeah.
But then when the whole audience
crowd
on them after being like completely in their favor, I'm just like, whoa.
I can't pick one. I'm just going to do two.
Okay. No, that's fine.
But kids being pushed out of vans.
Yes.
I love a good recurring gag.
Yes.
And that's like original enough and shocking enough.
Yeah.
That it's just perfect.
Go straight from the boat to the van on the highway.
And the second one is letting Michael Showalter be an old guy doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah. That's supposed to be a reference to something.
It was just made a character.
I think it was just making fun of just those kind of comedians.
Yeah. Just like an old Jewish comedian doing the same like. I'm this old, blah, blah, blah. Relying on hack bit. I feel like a lot of it was, like, deconstructing hack things.
Movie. Well, then the fact that he was killing so hard.
Everybody
thought it was, like, the funniest thing they'd ever seen in their entire lives.
No.
Day by day.
Or I liked when the little kid was doing, like, really racist stand-up.
Man, white people be like this.
Great child actors in this movie.
Oh,
absolutely.
Because there were scenes where they were, like, supposed to be scared, like, when they were on the raft, and they're just grinning.
That was beautiful.
Waterfall.
That was fantastic.
Oh, my God, it's amazing.
Oh.
The plot with the kid who marries the counselor.
Yeah, Gail. The one that marries Molly Shannon is so cute.
I really like that one, too.
Best thing that ever happened to me is...
Yeah, as he's got his pillow under his arm.
And
the best part about that kid is in any other movie where they would cast a child role, you would hate him. Like,
yeah,
instantly.
Yeah.
Oh, but in this movie, you're like, you are perfect. Yeah. You're the perfect snotty kid.
Yeah.
You know it all. And it works.
I think for me, David Hyde Pierce is very high up on that list. Because again, like we said, like this whole thing is about playing against types. I think David Hyde Pierce and Christopher Maloney, both of those characters are really great. And I really like, and I forgot how little screen time it actually gets, is Ken Marino's arc where he's trying to get back to camp to have sex with Abby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the car suddenly loses.
Yeah. He's just singing that song. And then, oh, fuck! It's so good.
And every moment she's supposed to, like, connect to him and
right.
she just doesn't.
Yeah.
I just want to take off my shirt.
Yes, yes. Oh, it's so good. And again, that's, like, especially in, like, teen movies, but, like, the quest for, like, losing your virginity is a big deal. The American Pie movies made an entire fucking franchise out of it, basically. So it's always, and most teen comedies are about, like, that, like, Sex Drive, obviously, from the title. Like, a lot of teen comedies are just kind of fixated on, like, sex and the role that it has at that point in your life. So to just see Ken Marino, who I also fucking love, is, like, one of my favorite comedic actors, who is another guy that, like, I love anytime I see him and stuff. I really hate that he's not, like, at the helm of more movies. Because usually, like, in stuff like that, like, he's a side character, usually.
Yeah.
Like, which is unfortunate.
Well, he's got his own show now, I think. Where it's like a fake dating show, and he's like... Oh,
yeah, Burning Love. Well, that's a web series.
I've never seen it.
It's not bad. I liked it. I think he's capable of, like, leading man in a comedy stuff.
I think he did, like, an indie movie about, like, clam fishing or something.
I know he did one called Bad Milo, which was...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's great. Him and Party Down.
Oh yeah, Party Down is so phenomenal. Yeah.
He wants to start a franchise subplot.
Yes. Yeah. Oh man. I can't believe we got through the entire thing and didn't talk about Party Down at all. But yeah, so for me it's David Hyde Pierce, Christopher Maloney, and then of course the side story with Ken Marino and Joe Latrulia, who's also fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see him finally getting his due with like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because he deserves it. Like, he's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
Cool. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you, Tim, for co-hosting this with me.
Thank you.
At the spur of the moment. Thank you, Bree and Mike, for coming on. And,
absolutely.
It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. It was. We've gone to a lot of unrelated places. But it's been a lot of fun, too, though. Like, I like talking about this shit. It's kind of my thing. Cool. So thank you guys so much. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll catch you next time.
Join us next time on the podcast as I take Lauren Benkaz and Eric Tate through Sam Raimi's Evil Dead 2. One of them absolutely loves it, one of them fucking hates it. So that's a fun time. Make sure to like the page, how have you not seen this on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Send any questions, comments, suggestions for the show to how have you not seen this podcast at gmail.com. And we'll catch you next time.